Welcome to the Shiur and Ebenezer of Parshas Truma. Parshas Truma, as we know, starts speaking about the construction of the Mishkan. And there's one Ebenezer in particular where he speaks about the notion that the Mishkan is supposed to be representative of what exists in the upper spheres in the Olam HaElyon. And it also corresponds in some way, says the Ibn Ezra, to the Olam HaKatan, to the quote-unquote the microcosm, the small world, the small universe, which is man. The Ibn Ezra quotes the notion, which goes back to Chazal, that man is the microcosm of the universe. Hence, man is the last thing that's made in creation. And in some ways, there are elements of the entire universe that are centered in man himself. So we're not going to go into that idea too much besides just mentioning it, but I think you have to mention it when you, you know, learn about the Mishkan. What I wanted to pick out from the Ibn Ezra this week is various different points which the Ibn Ezra makes with regard to the construction of the Mishkan and various aspects of its architecture, each of which I think is unique in terms of putting forward a position of the Ibn Ezra. The first thing in Ibn Ezra which I'd like to see has potentially practical relevance in terms of those who wear tcheles as part of their tzitzis. So without getting into that that discussion directly, obviously one of the first questions that one would ask with regards to tcheles is what exactly is this color tcheles? Right? Okay, we know in kind of vague terms it's blue-ish, but between the ish and the reality that here lies the whole issue. So there's a fascinating discussion that Ibn Ezra records, a difference of opinion between a Karaite and himself with regard to the what the definition of tcheles is, and we'll see that Ibn Ezra himself seems to have reversed his own opinion, and we'll lay that out in the next couple of moments. Tcheles is mentioned in the very very beginning of the Sedra. It says, this is the donation that you should take from Klal Yisrael. Zahav v'chesef and atoshes, take gold, take silver, take copper. Uscheles v'argamon v'salash shani v'sheish v'izim, and a whole series of different colors which are mentioned. And the first of those colors which is mentioned is tcheles. So what's tcheles? So the Ibn Ezra, in what's called the Pirush HaAruch, again we've made reference to the fact before that we have two versions of the commentary of Ibn Ezra to Shmos, the Pirush HaAruch, the quote-unquote longer commentary, which is the commentary which is printed in the standard Mikros Gedolos, records the following. Omar Yethes, says Yethes, who we've encountered before, Yethes is the Karaite, and the original Yethes was the son of Noah, but the Yethes that the Ibn Ezra quotes frequently was a Karaite. So Omar Yethes Shehud Kidmut Shachrus. You know what Cheles is, says this Karaite? It's the color of black. Kihut Tachlis Kol Hatzvaim. And why is it called Cheles? Cheles is related to the word Tachlis, the end of all colors, by which presumably the Kara either meant that black is the absence of color, it's the end of all colors, or I think probably more likely is what results when you mix all of the colors together. It's the top. What's that?
That's white.
Okay, so then I think I should correct it.
Right? White
would be the absence of white light. Right, when you put the colors together and you get paint, when you put the paint colors together, you get black, I believe. The combination of all the spectra of light ends up with white light. Right, so could be that what he means that it's hapless color from the end of all colors, the removal of all colors would be black. The hakol yoshuvu elov, all colors ultimately go back to black itself. Right, so that's this Yethes giving a linguistic interpretation as to why A, Tcheles is black, and how do we know that Tcheles is black? We know that Tcheles is black because it's related to the word Tachlis. The end or the goal of all colors is ultimately to get to black. Interestingly enough, lest we think that this is merely a Karaitic opinion. So,
where is the goal of all kosher to the blood?
The term goal is not the right word. The end result of all colors is ultimately black. In other words, again, it could be what he means, you know, the absence of colors, if you remove all the colors, or, again, not in terms of light, but I think just in terms of tints. If you mix all the colors together, ultimately you'll get a blackish color. You know, so that could be what he means. The top is the end of all colors is black. So, lest we see this as simply a Karaitic opinion, Zashkel Yerashi on Chumash, which seems to indicate something similar. Rashi writes at the very end of Parshas Shlach, we have the Parshas of Tzitzis, right? He quotes Sil Techeles. Why were the Jews given this mitzvah to put a thread of Techeles on their Tzitzis? So he writes, Makosom Haifa Balayla. Since it's supposed to remind us of the Exodus from Egypt, after all, at the end of the Parshas of Tzitzis, it says, Ani Hashem Elokeichem Asher Hoceiti Etchem Min Eretz Mitzrayim, I took you out of Egypt. The Egyptians were smitten at night with the Makas Pechoros. The Chain Seva HaTcheles Zomer Lorokia HaMashkir Le'es Eretz. So too, says Rashi, the color of Tcheles is similar to the sky as it darkens towards evening or towards night. Now, that could mean different things, but it's possible, certainly, I think it's a good reading of Rashi, that Rashi is saying that the color of Tcheles is actually a blackish-type color. Remember, he's saying that the color of Tcheles is supposed to remind us of Makas Becharis that took place in the middle of the night. You know, certainly the sky is black. And says Rashi, the color of Tcheles is like the sky as it blackens Le'eis Eretz in the evening time. Now, critical to understand this Rashi is, okay, what time in the evening time? Shortly before sunset? Shortly after sunset? A while after sunset? You know, the sky at that time, you know, every 10 minutes, the sky looks a slightly different color. But it does seem like Rashi is describing a black sky. And he uses the term mashkir. It becomes shachar, it becomes black. And the whole point of the Tcheles is to remind us of the blackness of that night when clouds are left Mitzrayim. So it seems like Rashi here on Chumash is describing the color Tcheles as being a black color. So in other words, before we're so quick to dismiss Yetas as saying, yes, the Tcheles means black because it's related to the word Taklus, the end of colors, you know, we should point out that Rashi may be saying something similar. The Ibn Ezra, however, does not agree with Yetas, this Karaite. He does not reference Rashi at all, but rather says to Ibn Ezra, "V'anu nismoch al Razal." We who are not Karaites, because we spoke about it length last week, that Ibn Ezra upholds the Torah Shabbat Teh, you know, against the Karaitic interpretation of Chumash wherever he can. "V'anu nismoch al Razal." We depend on our Chachamim. Sha'aru Shahu. They say that Tcheles is the color Yorok. Now, Yorok in modern-day Hebrew means green. In classical Hebrew, Yorok is used to describe a whole spectrum of colors ranging from yellow to green to blue. So, again, it's not quite clear where on that spectrum, you know, what point on that spectrum the Ibn Ezra is identifying the Tcheles as being, right? It's unlikely, I think, that he means that the Tcheles is yellow, right? So, although at a certain point in the production of the Tcheles, it actually does have a yellowish hue, right? But it certainly sounds like, as opposed to the Karaite Yefes, who says that Tcheles is a black color, the Ibn Ezra is describing the Tcheles as a lighter color. I think that much we can say you know, with safety, it's somewhere along the spectrum of yellow, green, or probably a lightish, greenish blue, which he's describing. It's a lighter color, clearly, than what Yefesh is describing.
Yellow and green.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Right. So, again, what exactly the hue of the Talmud is, according to the Ibn Ezra, is not totally clear, but it's certainly a lighter color than what Yefesh is describing. Interestingly, this is the way Ibn Ezra presents his opinion in what's called the Ibn Ezra Ha'aruch, the longer version of Ibn Ezra, which, as I pointed out, is what's printed in our Mikra'el Shtadalos. If you look in the Ibn Ezra HaKatzar, the quote-unquote short Ibn Ezra, one isn't really shorter or longer than the others, but they were just written at different times, and the Ibn Ezra's second commentary is not included in the classic Mikra'el Shtadalos, the Tarasayim Mikra'el Shtadalos, which were put out by Moshe Rav Kook, you know, a number of years back, include both versions of the commentary. So in the other version of Ibn Ezra's commentary, he writes, Teles, hu ayin, it is a color, krovo l'shachrus, close to black, v'hi me'at dome l'shamayim, and the color Teles is somewhat similar to the color of the sky. V'tochein shenikro kein, b'avur shezof ha'ayin tachlis kol ha'inayim, ki ena hareho, ki halo ben chila. Why is it called Teles? Right? Because, says the Ibn Ezra, it's the tachlis, the last in the spectrum of the colors. White is the first, then you have all the other colors, and then at the end of the spectrum, the tachlis of the spectrum is black, and that's why Teles, tachlis, is basically the same word. In other words, that which he attributed to Yefes, the Talmud, in one commentary, and then rejected in a different version of his commentary, the Ibn Ezra quotes, does not reference Yefes, and basically says, yes, you know, black is the color of Teles. So, from a practical point of view, again, if we were trying to determine what Teles, you know, for those who put Teles in their tzitzis, a very critical question over here would be, which came first, right? Is commentary number one the earlier version of the Ibn Ezra, or was commentary number two the earlier version of the Ibn Ezra? Presumably, whatever the Ibn Ezra wrote later in his life would be, you know, the more authoritative version of the Ibn Ezra's thought. Clearly, he changed his mind. Right? Clearly, at one point, he thought Teles was one color, at a different point, when he wrote the other commentary, he thought Teles was a different color. But which of these commentaries came first? The problem is that we don't seem to know which of the two commentaries is the earlier one and which is the later one. We know it's one printed in the Mikra'el Shtadalos, but again, that's not necessarily an indication that it's either the earlier one or the later one. So we don't actually know. You know, if we would have stopped Ibn Ezra the day before he died and said, you know, Moreno Rebavram, you know, so Teles, you know, part of the pun, what do you think Teles actually is? Is it a lightish blue color, or is it a dark black color? Right? We don't know what he actually would have said bottom line, right? We know that at different points in his life, he had different perspectives on this issue. Right? So, again, just to put that out there, it's just one other, you know, Mara Mokka, one other source, you know, for the whole discussion about Teles, you know, this Ibn Ezra becomes very, very important in terms of figuring out, you know, what the exact color is. And it's clear that it's an issue here in the Ibn Ezra, but it's not totally clear how it comes down.
Regardless of, you know, the fact that we
don't know
which came first,
shouldn't
he in the second one saying that he had changed his position?
No, he wouldn't necessarily have to say that he changed his position. I guess he was banking on the fact that no one was going to pull the earlier manuscript out of the closet, right? That's what happens when you leave the first draft lying around, right? You know, people get a hold of it. But, you know, again, in that day and age, I don't think he necessarily would have had to assume that a manuscript that he even made public would necessarily have wide distribution. You know, manuscripts were hard to come by.
So whenever he wrote the second version, Krausus rewrote it. You know, this is what I think now, and I don't think he felt the need to reference what he had written before.
I have to tell you, I'm a little stymied by this whole color confusion.
Yeah.
Because based on other McCushing, we have come to learn the scale as this is, and see it during the day, not at night, it's the same as far.
Yeah.
Focus on Shemayim, heaven, blue.
So what color is the Shemayim?
Yeah, I mean, in the day it's blue, but
who says it's supposed to be the color of...
You can't look at the scissors at night. It's the whole...
Right, that's true, but maybe the Tzelos is supposed to remind you of the nighttime stars. I didn't make that up. That's Rashi at the end of Shlach. Right? Rashi at the end of Shlach says that Seva HaTzelos Doma L'Rakia HaMashkir L'Eif Erev. The Tzelos is supposed to remind me of the evening star. So if that's the case, so, you know, that's a darker color, not a lighter color.
The Gemara that I'm already referencing, Menachos says it's Doma L'Ram,
right.
Doma L'Rakia,
right.
Which implies that it's a lighter color.
Well, yes and no, because I could ask you the same question about the Yam. As case in point, right, look at the Atlantic, look at the Pacific. It's a difference. Right?
Okay,
right. But again, the question is how domel layam is domel layam, right? In other words, a very black, a black color is not that different from navy, right? And there are times, again, the water is reflective. I mean, so there are times, if you're looking at the water, you know, towards the evening, which is when we're considering what the sky looks like, so the water is also, you know, going to be a darker color, call it navy, call it blackish, exactly what you want to call it. The truth is, you know, we know even from our own experience, there are some waters that have this very intense blue color to them, and there are other waters which are, it's not black, you have to say they're darker, right?
It's darker blue.
Okay, but the difference, I'm saying, the difference between a navy and a black may be insignificant enough that, you know, if you look at a blackish color, it reminds you of navy.
And then the Gemara also says you have to make sure you get from the correct source, not the incorrect source,
right.
The incorrect source on
Kali-Elon,
right. Which I think it produces an indigo color.
Right, so then we would go back to the same question. Okay, are we sure that we can identify Kala-Ila properly? Right, again, all of this stuff, you know, you have to, you know, question yourself. Do we feel confident identifying Kala-Ila? I mean, that's also, you know, I don't think an obvious, you know, something that we're obviously sure about. Again, you see, again, this issue of what the color of Tzelos, forget about the origin of Tzelos, you know, which animal exactly, which fish, which mollusk, you know, whatever it is, you know, produces Tzelos. But that's a whole separate discussion. We're not even talking about it. But what is the color of Tzelos? So we see here in the Ibn Ezra in his lifetime changed his mind drastically, you know, about what the color of Tzelos is exactly. Now, it's interesting, just as one more note to throw into this, one thing which is consistent in the Ibn Ezra, and we saw this last week in Parshas Mishpatim, is that the Ibn Ezra will always defend Chazal in terms of halachic matters against the Karaites. If the Karaites give an interpretation of Chumash, which is against Parash Baal Peh, you know, so the Ibn Ezra always comes swinging into the rescue, Chazal are right, Chazal are right, Chazal are right. In the first commentary of Ibn Ezra on Tzelos, which we read today, so he does exactly that. Yes, it says that it's black, but Chazal say that it's a lighter blue. In the second commentary we read tonight, he accepts that it's black. What about Chazal? You know, I mean, you were so gung-ho defending Chazal in the first version of the commentary. What about Chazal in the second version of the commentary? Presumably, the Ibn Ezra in the second version of the commentary became convinced that the Gemaras could be read in such a way that Chalas is black. And again, it's hard to dismiss that summarily because go back to Rashi and Chumash. Rashi and Chumash seems to say that Chalas is black. Right? And Rashi clearly, you know, works with the Midrashim of Chazal. You know, Rashi's clearly not looking to say Pshat, you know, in the Pesukim against the interpretation of Chazal. So, you know, apparently the Ibn Ezra went back and forth as to whether the Gemaras could be read in such a way that Tchelus is black, or whether the Gemaras indicate that Tchelus is a lighter blue, you know, maybe even closer to green, and, you know, we're left with this ambiguity as to what the Ibn Ezra held exactly. Okay, other points of the Ibn Ezra, she said, another point probably, what's the truth? Right? You know, so, okay, when you were a kid, your mother used to tell you you were a little cherub. Or maybe not, right? But what does she mean by that exactly? You know, now all these years later, when she called you a cherub, what exactly did that mean? So, you know, the psukim reference proven. Right? Terakotei Pasuk Yisayin Mosisa Kachore Zahav Tar, you should make a covering for the Aram. Yosisa Shnayim Kruvim Zahav, you should make two Kruvim out of gold. What exactly are these Kruvim? So, here the Ibn Ezra writes the south. Amukad Moneno, our predecessors, you know, Chazal, said, Kitsurat Kruvim Kishnei Ne'orim, that the Kruvim look like two young kids. Upirshu Kruvaya, the Lost Narani Vakat Meshoris. And they interpreted the word Kruv as Kiravya, like a kid. Ravya in Aramaic is a child. Kiravya is Kruv. Now, the Ibn Ezra, you know, was a grammarian. And he says as follows. The Nachon Divru, Shahayo Kitsurat Yelodim and Hikabol. If you had a tradition that the Kruvim look like children, so I accept that tradition. Again, that's another idea that Ibn Ezra says time and time again. An oral tradition has tremendous weight, even if there isn't necessarily a source and falsehood for it. If you have a tradition that the Kruvim were children, fine. The Somu Hamilo Lezecher, Kumamila Chanukah. But don't think for a minute, says to Ibn Ezra, that the real way that we know that Kruv means child is because the word Kruv is Kir, Ravya. Because the kaf in kruv is part of the word itself. It's not kiruv, it's not that the kaf is a prefix, which means like, right? Clearly, grammatically, it's kruv, it's one word. You know what it's like, you know, Chazal didn't mean to tell you grammar in this particular case. They were just giving you a good way to remember, you know, what the meaning of kruvin is. The Samu Amiro Lezecha, they just made the word kruv kiravya as a cute way, like a, you know, a mnemonic, if you will, to remember what the word means. Kimo milat Chanukah. You know what it's kind of like? Says the Ibn Ezra, like the word Chanukah. What do you mean? So when many of us were children, we learned, you know, that why is it called Chanukah? Because Chalu Chof Hei. They encamped and rested on the 25th of Kislev. That's really what the word Chanukah means. That's Ibn Ezra. Come on, grammatically, that's not what the word Chanukah means. The word Chanukah is related to the word Chinuch, you know, which means to consecrate something. Right? They were mechanics, the values. But, you know, okay, as a mnemonic, it's nice. As long as you don't get confused what's the mnemonic and what's the actual grammar, we're good. So, says Ibn Ezra as follows, however. The Chashir Chitasti Almira Milas Kruvim, Hinehu Tsugos. If you want just like a very literal definition of what the word kruv means, says the Ibn Ezra, I think the word kruv literally means figurine. You should make two kruvim means, you should make two figurines, and the word kruv itself doesn't imply a particular form to what the figurine looks like. Meaning, says the Ibn Ezra, I accept what Chazal tell us that the kruvim look like kids, but what the Pasuk says is that the Velkisa Shine Kruv in Zah, basically the Pasuk is saying make two figurines out of gold, and then we have a tradition that says, you know, what kind of figurines were they? They were figurines that looked like children. Right, and he brings proof to that, and I mention this because it actually ties in to something that we've been learning on Shabbos in Yechezkel, right? So there are two times in Sefer Yechezkel where Yechezkel sees a vision of the Maaser Merkava. He sees this vision of the chariot. And one of the things that he sees these chayos, these creatures that have four faces apiece. Right? What are the four faces? So they're described differently the first time than they are the second time. The first time around they're described as being the face of a man, the face of a lion, the face of an eagle, and the face of an ox. The second time he sees them, they're described as having the face of a man, an eagle, a lion, and a kruv. The ox is converted into a kruv. So Chazal comments on this change. We probably spoke about it Shabbos when we learned Yechezkel. Chazal speak about this change from the ox to the kruv, and basically they describe how Yechezkel and Navi went through Rav Shalom and said, you know, the Jewish people don't have really a good experience with oxen, you know, like Egel Azov, you know, it brings back all kinds of bad memories. Could you get rid and change that one face on the Merkava and, you know, make it go from an ox to being an angel, to being a kruv? And the Rav Shalom says, okay, you know, for you, yourself, whatever you want, you know, we'll switch it around. Something that Ezra says that, okay, fine, but the simple pshat is very different. If the word kruv just means figurine, so then there really is no contradiction between the first version of the Merkava and the second version of the Merkava. In the first version of the Merkava, it spells out what the fourth face was. It was the face of an ox. And, you know, the second version of the Merkava, for whatever reason, just says, you know, the fourth face was a figure. It was an ox. There's no contradiction between being a kruv and an ox. Right? Because the kruv just makes a figure. There was a tzura, it was a shape of a certain kind of face. What kind of face was it? Whatever it was. You know, it was a human, it was an ox, it was a chimpanzee, you know, whatever it was. Right? It doesn't make a difference. The point being, the word kruv doesn't imply a specific figure, it just means a figurine in a general sense. What's the upshot of all of this? Right? When your mother called you a cherub, she really wasn't taking a position as to what she looked like. According to Ibn Ezra, at least, I don't know if your mother learned Ibn Ezra, but if, according to Ibn Ezra, when your mother called you a kruv, a cherub, she just meant that your face had some kind of form to it. It had some kind of figure. Right? Was it a nice figure? Was it not a nice figure? You know, did you look like a good kid, like a chimpanzee? You know, she wasn't really weighing in on that particular issue. The term kruv just means figure without describing a particular type of figure. Okay, so bear that in mind. Next time you want to try to describe something as being angelic, the term kruv may or may not be the best term, you know, to describe it. Yes, right, it also means a cabbage. I hope nobody's mother would call them a cabbage. But yeah. What's that? I guess so, right? I don't see that. Here's a commandment of the Tasha Omer Lachak on his wonderful exactly to Israel. The Sikha, Yerba Lohem, Sarah Mitzvah, Shanemar,